Welcome to the SPS Digital Learning Hour, brought to you by the Digital Learning and Assessment Department. We're coming to you today from a conference room in Central Office, bringing you the latest news in Springfield Public Schools in regards to technology, along with inspiring interviews from teachers who are using technology in the classroom. I'm your host, Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ed Guy. You can find me out on all the socials at Bearded Tech Ed, my own personal website, beardedtechedguy.com, and of course, all throughout the We Learn section on MySPS with our blog, our 22 Tools Challenge. We are excited to bring you today's interview with Katie and Damaris over at the Virtual School. I find this one very fascinating because most of our interviews so far this year have all been with teachers who were remote and have come back in the classroom. The Virtual School is a brand new school to here in Springfield, so it was really great to meet and talk with her about how it's going this year and kind of her journey in education. But before we get there, there are a few announcements that we do need to go over. And just to let you know, if you are not out on the MySPS page, you're going to miss a bunch of these announcements. Hopefully you are, or at least getting the emails with them when they do come. There's that mandatory ethics training. Make sure that you attend that. If you are brand new to the district, you should have done that in the first 30 days. Otherwise, everybody else, it's every 2 years. So if this is your year on, make sure you get that done before the end of the school year. During school vacation, there's going to be vaccination clinics scheduled. So check out MySPS for all of that. There's a whole bunch of open enrollments happening right now and new benefits here in Springfield. Two different groups wanting to do interviews. And probably the most important one out of all of these announcements is the school year calendar. So if you'd like to know when school starts, when breaks are, and when school ends for next school year, the 2022-2023 school year, make sure you go out to MySPS and take a look at that calendar so that you can prepare yourself for the future. Some other announcements that I always like to talk about is we have our 22 Tools Challenge. If you go out to the WeLearn site, you can go right into where these challenges are. There are, of course, 22 of them. And every time you complete one, if you complete it meeting the guidelines required, you get added to the leaderboard. Leaderboard gets you prizes. Prizes makes everybody happy. And plus, there's bragging rights and badges that you can add to your emails and stuff and all that. So I highly encourage you to check it out because the big thing is you're already doing a lot of these things in the classroom. And quite frankly, DLA wants to give you credit for it. If you've missed the last few weeks of blog posts, you of course saw the one on Nearpod. Now we're doing a couple on Sway. So the last one was Sway Me Away, which is all about what Sway is and what it can do and how you can use it in the classroom. And we have another blog post coming up, which is all about comparing Sway and PowerPoint. There's a lot of features that are similar. There's some things that are different. And we want to make sure that you know that you have access to these things and how you can use them, of course, in your classroom. You can find those blog posts out on the MySPS blog site, or you can find them out on my personal site, beardedtechedguy.com. So with that, I can't wait to get into this interview of the week with Katie Demers over at the Virtual School. It was awesome. Check it out.
Sure. So my name is Katie Ann Demers. I've been teaching for about 22 years, and I am currently the fifth grade science teacher at the Springfield Virtual School.
Early on in your teaching career, what was it like using technology in the classroom?
Yeah. So when I first started teaching, it was far and few between. I was lucky if I had a desktop computer. Very rarely did we do PowerPoints. And it slowly evolved into PowerPoint where I could put something up. I had the first Mimio devices that turned a whiteboard into a smart board for you, which was super exciting at the time that we had this piece of equipment that we could use on a whiteboard. So there's limited technology, if any. And if the kids saw a laptop cart come rolling into your classroom, it meant that they could go. We used to call them web quests, where they would go and search for information on the internet off a topic that we happen to be doing in science.
I love WebQuest. That was one of the things when I was a student I loved doing. Now, When it comes to that early technology, I'm assuming you had an overhead projector. Did you ever try using the overhead projector to write on the chalkboard at all?
I did. I had an overhead projector that I used to try to project onto my chalkboard. And then I used white contact paper so I could see it better. And we used that as a whiteboard. And then we used shower ink, like the plastic shower that you used to put inside your shower to make a shower. We use those as white laptop whiteboards that the kids could write on and erase at the time. We used to take the overhead projector and try to use washable markers on them. Mm-hmm. And the little digital screens that you run off to make your overheads. Mm-hmm. We used to give those out and use those as our whiteboards too, way back when.
Way back when. Yeah, I remember like when I first started teaching, I didn't have a smart board or anything like, or even a projector. So what I found with those overhead projector things and the vis-a-vis markers was that they were terrible to do work with because you had to write like with your arm stuck. I know no one can see what I'm doing right now. Like the arm out like a foot and you're trying to write because if you were in front of it, no one could see it. Correct. So that's what I was asking about. Did you try using it on chalkboard? Because I always found that as long as the projector wasn't bumped, because it was usually on a cart, posting it up on the wall so that the students could go up there, not only did it give them more room to write, because of course everything's bigger, but it also made it easier for everybody else to follow along too. So I was just curious.
It's true. Yeah. I used to get my hands covered in the marker on the side.
Yes, very much so. In those early years, now, if the students didn't have access to stuff like that, what did you have access to? Did you have your own personal laptop or desktop that you used? And how did you use that?
Technology has always been a love of mine, so I've always had devices. So I had access to a laptop, to an iPad, to get a smartphone device as they came aboard. And so I had access to those things and I would build lessons. I started making my lessons digital. So I was planning digitally, but I was still on paper and the kids were still getting information on paper for the most part. When I got the Mimeo equipment to turn my whiteboard into a Mimeo board, that was my first introduction to like smart notebook software, but it was their version of it, right? It wasn't a smart board per se. And that's where I had to get really crafty around now this digital world of using markers and tools and trying to figure out how to manipulate shapes, and math not necessarily lends itself to some of those equations and things that you're looking for. And then the glitches that go along with it. Because not all the time do you have internet or Wi-Fi or it's spotty. And then the lesson falls apart because now you're trying to rely on technology instead of the paper and pencil that the kids wanted.
Right. Or had access to. Which I know has always been, from my position in the last 5 years, that's always been a challenge of being like, well, it's not going to do that anymore because it's much more reliable. Just think about your phone and how back in when I was in middle school and high school, the phones were like the size of a novel that you had to like flip open. And now they're smaller than something small.
They're tiny. Right now.
They're small, a lot smaller now.
Yeah.
So when did you really first like, because the laptop carts would come and you do something with them, like with the WebQuest. When was it that you were more, had the technology more readily available to your students and what did you do with them?
Yeah. So I think it was, I want to say it was about 10 years ago or so. I ended up at a school where we were almost one-to-one. We had carts in every room. And as leaders, we started pushing ourselves. At the time, I was an assistant principal and a STEM director. And we were pushing ourselves to do professional development around integrating technology tools in the classroom. Because what we noticed was students' attention span has decreased over time. They just don't have the attention span that they used to have. And so we were looking for tools to get teachers more involved in getting their students engaged in the lesson. So they were doing more of the productive learning or active learning versus this passive learning where we're standing and delivering. And so I started incorporating it as mini professional developments for teachers. And then it turned into, can you model that for me in the classroom? Can you do this for me? And at the time, all of our teachers had smart boards in their classrooms. Mm-hmm. So it just became, okay, I'm going to show you how to use this tool. Go back and create a lesson on it. And then it turned over the next 3 or 4 years, it turned into us videotaping each other, understanding how we teach, what moves we were making intentionally, what tools were the kids using in the classroom. You know, the smart board became a real integral tool, especially in math and science, where kids can now manipulate things. Or in science, we started to do a lot with FET simulations. So kids could see phenomena that was happening or like energy moving when they couldn't normally manipulate it in the classroom, where we just didn't have the tools for them to do a demo. They could actually do it virtually. So, but it's only been recent, the last 10, 15 years, that this has really come into be more of a practice rather than sort of something that I looked at and sort of was involved with.
You just mentioned that you were an assistant principal and a STEM director at that time. When did you make that transition from classroom teacher to administration?
So I was in a classroom full time for about 11 years, and then I was able to become a collaborative professional development teacher in school for science. And I did that for 3 years, and then I became an assistant principal and STEM director. And then I eventually went on to be a principal, as I was through the pandemic. So the last 11 years, I've kind of been in administration. And prior to that, I was in the classroom. So it's been a little bit now I'm returning to a classroom, which is kind of a nice way to see how skills of teachers have changed over time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to be so much more versatile now than you did when you didn't have all this technology and all these other things available to you.
Yeah. Definitely. Very true. You were saying that you were principal during COVID, the beginnings of COVID. I mean, we're still technically in it at the moment. What was that like from a principal perspective? Because I imagine there was, you had to help make sure the teachers how to teach digitally and also make sure that the students were able to access and be a part of the lesson. So, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So I was a principal of a school. It was my first year at the school, actually, when COVID hit. We were a school that had very little technology available to us, so we were not one-to-one by any means. And in a 40-hour notice, we had to flip to remote learning. And so some of the things I did intentionally was to support teachers was that first March to June, we were paper packets and trying to like hand out material to students and get families up and running. And we ended up taking any laptop or any Chromebook that we even had available to us and started pushing those out, but it was not nearly what we needed when it came time. And as we started to figure out these Chromebooks and purchasing and getting all that ready, I, as a leader, decided I need to still connect with the community. And so what I did was digital challenges. And every week I would tape a video, release it out to the community through Remind and put it on our website. And I would put a new challenge. And the challenges were meant to be silly, but meant to be fun and just connect us all. And parents or students would send me their submissions to the challenge. And then at the end of the week, my assistant principal and I would do a video and release showing everybody's submissions. The other thing that we did during that time is we would read a book to the community. So my assistant principal, myself, my guidance counselor, I had teachers volunteer. We would read a different book, and then we would put that out to the community as well. And then we really just tried to meet people where they were at. So at drop-in centers, when we were handing out lunches, because we were still feeding kids that needed, you know, lunches during that time, we would be outside trying to help them hand out packets. I had a packet system going. We had bins outside the school. Year two, we got much better at it. We became a one-to-one. So it forced us to become a one-to-one school. So we ended up with a one-to-one digitally for all students. I ended up having to recognize that some of my teachers were technology adverse, were really fearful of it. And some of my technologies were my teachers were early adopters. They were ready to go with technology. So I found the ones who were really comfortable with it and had them trained on various learning platforms that we were about to use and embark. And I myself had to quickly get up to speed on the platform that we were going to use for digital learning. And then we had to really go slow and teach one another. So those first few months of year two of kind of COVID, when we were all fully remote, was really learning about the platform. And we didn't try to do everything all at once. We didn't try to put all the apps in front of kids and make it flashy. We stayed with like one app. And I remember some teachers like, no, I need to go more. And like, no, we need to get good at one thing first. Mm-hmm. And then slowly integrate all those other technology pieces that you wanted to do. Because together we were able to do it, but collectively one of us couldn't do it all.
So how are you able to identify the teachers who, because it sounds like you went with more of a train the trainer model where you had teachers training other teachers. How are you able to identify who would be good at that? Because while a lot of us who are teachers are very good at being teachers to students, it's harder to make that transition to teaching adults.
Yeah, so it was trial and error. It really was. It was those teachers who I could see had a presence online or would always do our challenges. We'd start with, hey, could you model that for your peers? Or how did you do that? More of a conversation. I was able to get a teacher on each team who was super comfortable with technology. So that helped because then they were only like helping their teammates. So comfortability there around, I know my teacher team, so I can help my teacher team. When it came to whole school, there was very few who really wanted to do full school. And then we looked for some volunteers. We're like, hey, could we shout you out? Could we model it for you? If you don't want to stand in front of your peers, can you walk us through it? Or could you create, I had some teachers that wanted to just create digital guides for people to follow. So those step by step. Why not? If you want to do that for me, absolutely. It's a way to share your talents without actually putting you in front of your peers. So I tried to look for other ways that they would incorporate themselves into sharing their strengths too.
Yeah, I know for me, when I made the transition from classroom to the position I have now, there was definitely that I'm not talking to students anymore. And so like when I first started doing trainings, I was even like when I had to do one in front of the superintendent, I still had that because I had freshly been out of the classroom. I had just finished teaching summer school. So it was more of like, that kind of teaching where you're still like expecting them to respond how students would respond when for the most part, students will respond, adults, not so much.
No, they won't.
So I can definitely see how many different ways to get there worked. What were some of the programs that your school adopted?
So we used Canva. We used Canvas and Canva. And then at the time we used ST Math, and then we had an Adobe PDF reader that would convert files for us that we all had to get used to using. And we were not a Google district. So we were actually a Microsoft Office district. So we became very familiar with Teams, and Teams became our, mode of having online meetings with kids. It became the way we connect with parents. It became our virtual meeting platform. For the most part. And then we use GoGuardian as part of our monitoring for students' computers and what they were allowed to go on and what they were not allowed to go on. And then as a school, we adopted the Remind messaging app. So the entire school was on Remind so that way we had some control over messages going back and forth. And then we use other platforms such as, you know, Project Lead the Way has their own platform. We use that. We use the ST Math, we use Reflex Learning. So we used a variety of other educational apps that we would supplement the curriculum with.
Awesome. So I actually have a question about GoGuardian because, as you know, here in Springfield, we use Dino. GoGuardian and Dino are competitors. So what were some of the benefits that GoGuardian has that Dino doesn't have?
So the feature I loved about GoGuardian was I could immediately call a student's house and get them and their parents in a meeting right away from GoGuardian. I didn't have to use Zoom or Microsoft. I could just get them right on there. And the other piece that we found super helpful was there was a running tally of messages and who had answered the message from a kid. So kids could message right on GoGuardian to the teacher, and it came up live on your screen. I haven't played too much in Dino, so I know I can send messages, but I never get messages from students on it. So in Go Guardian, it was kind of nice because they don't have to go to Schoology or something else. I could just get a message straight to them and they could reply to me really easily. Mm. And that was one feature that we really liked.
Nice. I'm always interested when I know that there's other programs out there that are similar. I don't remember why we ended up with Dino, but I know Go Guardian was in the running. So.
Oh, nice. Nice. Well, yeah. They're very similar, though. They are very similar to you.
Right. With all of this work you had done to help build up the school as a principal, you decided to leave. So what was that process like for you? Because I imagine when you're working in, like, we all have different paths as teachers. Some of us go into administration. Some of us branch off into things like I am doing. And some of us just stay that teacher for 40 years. So,
yeah. So I was driving 45 minutes away. So each way, and it became a lot. So I was actually looking for something closer to home. At the same time, I felt like after being an administrator for 11 years, there was a little bit of that spark that had started me on this career 21 years ago was starting to dim. And I really wanted to challenge myself to figure out what it takes to actually be a teacher in a post-COVID world with everything that's going around on around them. And I also was a little bit curious to see if I still had the skills to do it as well. Mm-hmm. And there's something intriguing about opening a brand new school. I had done it 5 years ago now. I started a STEM school from scratch. And so founding another school or being part of a founding team seemed like it was really great. And I had previously worked for Allison prior to, so to get back with the principal that you loved was just icing on the cake. So I thought if I was ever going to go back into teaching, now's probably a really great time to go back and try my hands at it and really see if I can put some of the skills that I've learned over the course of the last 11 years into practice on a full-time basis and do something that integrates my love of technology. And so I kind of found this and I was like, all right, let me go try this. You know, and it's been really great, but it's also opened my eyes up to when I become an administrator again, whenever that may be, how to better support teachers than I had done prior to, because now it's a whole nother world out there when you need to support them, not only with their content, but now all these soft skills that I don't think teachers really realized they needed until now that we've been put and faced with it.
Very cool. So how has this year gone? We are, this March, so we're about over halfway through the year. So,
yeah, so this year's been an adventure, to say the least. You know, getting used to seeing students on screen all the time. And I think the kids have taught me a lot about websites and masking. And I've gotten really great at blocking sites and learning their ways of interpreting sites, masking as other sites so they can get on all sorts of other things. But I've also had to get super creative to engage with them and to figure out that a stand and deliver or just a Nearpod isn't always going to cut it. And so I've had to look for really unique ways to get them engaged or to have them show me that they understand what we've just gone over. And so that kind of been the biggest eye-opening thing for me is always trying to find these other programs or these apps that might take them and their learning on a journey and also expand my skills. And it's really been a great, I've had the opportunity to try some things and some things have worked really well and other things, we just won't do that again.
So what are some of those things that have worked really well then?
I discovered Flipgrid is really great when you want them to demonstrate an understanding about a topic where they can just go crazy with it. And they're really showing you something and not regurgitating any information to you, but showing an application piece of it. We've used Minecraft, and I have to say I was skeptical of Minecraft at first, but I was able to take a course in it. And the kids have taught me a lot, but some of those lessons on there have really engaged my students who are less likely to engage on a Nearpod. Nearpods we use all the time. They allow kids some freedom that they can write. They can show you what they're thinking. They're able to demonstrate. I've used the discussion stems on Schoology. I've done Wakelets with the kids so that they have almost like the web, you know, we talked about the old web quest at the very beginning of the year of, you know, what we used to do. So I use like Wakelets and Padlets now as like mini web quests to figure out our own version of that. Because those I don't think have transferred into the digital world yet, those old-fashioned ones. Mm-hmm. So we've done some of that. We've done Pixton, where kids will now create their own comic strips, and they love to share those with their classmates or with families. So we've done that work as well. So just trying to give them a variety of modalities to use to demonstrate their understanding. We've created songs using BandLab in collaboration with the music teacher around a topic such as plants, and they created their own rap songs that demonstrated the understanding of the characteristics of living things. So just trying to get creative and giving them multiple ways to demonstrate their understanding, because I'm not in a classroom where I can look over their shoulder and see what they've answered.
Yeah. No, a lot of those programs that you mentioned, I love. I love Wakelet. I don't think it's used as much in our district right now, but it does allow you to do the web quests how you used to be able to do them.
Yeah.
But it's also a great way for, I don't know how much you had to do, you did this, but when I was teaching fifth grade, I had students, when I would send them off on an explorers project as to cover some of the social studies standards early on in the year, they would come back to me with, in their reports and their notes, with some of the strangest things about different explorers, like Christopher Columbus lives in Ohio and plays basketball. I'm like, that might be true, but that's not who we're looking at.
Yep.
Like being able to curate resources for the students, being like, hey, so for when we're talking about Vikings, here are a whole bunch of resources on Vikings that we are going to use over this time. And if you want to learn more, go through here. I love Wakelets for that reason. I also use it personally. I have Wakelet. I don't like Pinterest as much.
Yep.
Because I can't write notes that are easily accessible. And with Wakelet, you can write notes on all of it. So.
Correct. Yeah, that and Padlet. I have Padlet boards going, and we have Trello boards going that keeps us organized with all of our links and who needs to go where. And, you know, it was finding all these managed, like these organization things that we needed to figure out so that I could grab a link really fast, or I could get a website that kids could use multiple times, or some math tool that I needed them to have readily available.
Yeah.
You know, it was really getting those things.
That's awesome. So I don't want to take up too much more of your time. It has been a great conversation so far, but we are in the middle of a day, of course, and you are going to have to go back to teaching at some point very soon. So to wrap it up, I just want to ask what I think is probably the most important question, which is, how are you taking care of yourself? From the Digital Learning Playbook, a book that I've read pre-COVID and during COVID, the very first thing they talk about for teachers to do well in the digital sphere is to take care of themselves first so that they can take care of their students. Because if they're not taking care of themselves, they're not going to be able to take care of their students. So what are some things that you're doing to take care of yourself?
Yeah, so I've really taken that initiative to really focus on myself. And one thing I do is every day at lunchtime, I go for a walk with a colleague. Her and I go out of the building and we just take a walk around. Just to get some fresh air, to close our eyes away from a computer, to not look at it for 10 or 15 minutes, and really just talk about anything but work. And then I'm also really, you know, I found outlets of cooking and baking and axe throwing, and I stay true to those so that I have time to go do those. And I've learned that I can tackle so much in a day, but that as long as I've tackled the main things that needed to get done, those other things can get tackled the next day. And so it's really, you know, making those priority lists, and I make those for myself. And then I set time where, you know what, parents can't get me at 9, 10 o'clock at night. You know, it's off to them, but I'll answer you and I'll be 100% on when I'm on. But I've, you know, really had to hone on because we're digital. Parents have an utter sense that you're always going to be on 24/7. And they can get you because they have your email and they can get you through their apps. And so I've really had to hold true to, you know, deciding to put some quiet hours out there so that I'm not answering 24/7. Because I know myself to know enough I'd be on 24/7.
Yes, I concur with that completely about being on all the time. So just a couple of questions off of this. What's been your favorite thing to try in cooking or baking?
Favorite thing to try was a lemon pound cake that I had discovered over COVID. And I finally got around to trying to make it. And the first time was an absolute flop, but the second time was much better. So
awesome. Axe throwing.
I've done this a few times. Do you have a specific strategy you use when you're throwing it? Because I treat it like a baseball and I come like back and I
love it.
I use it. I usually get pretty close to dead on most of the time. And it's
doing good. So. Yeah,
but I know I'm not throwing it correctly because I've seen other people do it where it's the two hands over the head. And
they, so you could do it the two hands over the head and go for it. I can't. I just don't have enough strength in my hand. So I do a four-finger grip on it, which is almost like it with my thumb straight up and throw by my ear at it. I threw on a women's league for a year, all the different seasons, but I found that worked. And I also found I needed a lighter axe. Because, you know, you can, they're weighted. So variety of, lighter axe, but a longer handle.
Huh.
Who knew?
When I went to, there's a place in Hadley, at the mall where they have axe throwing there.
Oh, really?
And there was none of that whole weighted, everybody had the same axe type thing. So that's good to know. That might help improve accuracy even a little better. So
that's right. Yeah. Go to your local like Home Depot or Lowe's and pick up the different axes and see which one feels. Because literally that's what we used for our league was I went to a Lowe's and bought the latest axe that I could throw across the line, essentially, to hit a target.
Awesome. Well, it's been a lot of fun talking with you. I want you to allow you to get a walk in and just enjoy the rest of the day. I can see from my window that it's sunny. And so it might be cold, but it's sunny. So
that's right. That's all that matters.
So thank you again for taking some time out of your day.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you, Katie, for taking the time to interview with me and to share all the things that are happening over at the virtual school and throughout your 22-year career here in education. I love the fact of WebQuest. I think I might even try to start organizing a few Wakelet drop-ins or trainings that people can take near the end of the year so they can learn how to use it. And maybe I'll have to hit you up for some advice on that. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, please make sure that you go out to wherever you're listening to this podcast and leave us a rating and review and make sure you share it with your colleagues, because that is how we can grow this podcast and we can also help bring out to the rest of the world how awesome Springfield is and how everybody should want to be a teacher here in Springfield. So thank you for spending some time with me. If you love this episode of the SPS Digital Learning Hour, like I said, go to iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. Those are the big ones. And if you leave us subscribe, rating, and review, we very much appreciate it. I'm Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ed Guy, and this is the SPS Digital Learning Hour. The Digital Learning Hour is written, directed, produced, edited by Mike Thomas over at OITA inside Springfield Public Schools. If you liked the music in this episode, please check out Risen. Show notes have all of the contact information for this song and others from the artists.